Welcome to Revitalize and Restart, a podcast dedicated to the discussion of church revitalization, restart, and renewal. We invite you to listen as a host and some of the best practitioners in the field of church revitalization and restart discuss issues facing the church in America. And now, here is your host, Dr. Steve Sells, author, conference speaker, and president of Operation Transformation.
Welcome to another episode of Revitalize and Restart. It's a podcast that's brought to you by Operation Transformation, a church revitalization ministry that's based out of Salisbury, North Carolina. I'm Dr. Steve Sells, your host, and it's a pleasure to have with us today Dr. Steve Smith. Dr. Smith is a founder and of an organization called Church Equippers Ministries. It's a nonprofit organization to train pastors and leaders and churches in spiritual transformation and to help churches grow and be what they would need to be. Steve holds a Doctor of Ministries degree in executive leadership. He's an author of 8 different books, and you can go to Amazon and get those books. I would encourage you to do that. At the same time, I'll give you his website address, and he has a bookstore there that you can go to and purchase any of this material. Steve's been a pastor, a church planter, and Southeast regional leader for Converge, a group that works with diverse cultural groups. He's worked with churches in church planting, training, church renewal, and pastoral searches. His greatest passion, and I like this about him, his greatest passion is to help pastors and churches by guiding them toward transformation through an intimate relationship and a growing intimate relationship with God. Born in Virginia, Steve has been married for over 40 years to his wife. They have 4 children, 5 grandchildren, and they're based out of Central Florida. Welcome to the broadcast today, Dr. Smith. Thank you for being here with us.
Thanks for letting me be with you, Steve.
Today, we're going to be discussing what I believe to be a subject of great importance, not only to the local church, but especially to pastors and church leaders. We're going to be talking about dealing with unfinished spiritual business in a congregation. And this is especially important to me as a church revitalizer because I've seen promising revitalization endeavors just bottom out because of past problems that the church had and unresolved past problems. Yeah. So I'm glad we're going to be talking about this today. I want to begin with the first question, and you can kind of take off from this if you would, Dr. Smith. We talk about unresolved problems. What are some of these unresolved problems that we're going to be talking about today?
Okay, let me start with a story here. Several months ago, I got an email from a young revitalizer up in Ohio, and he was telling about all the things that God was doing, that after 2 years of investment, the church auditorium was full, and he was talking about all these people who had come to faith and were being discipled and marriages that were being saved. And then right in the middle of the email, he said, and oh, by the way, the church leaders fired me.
Oh,
and
wow.
and literally, this is exactly why I talk about this subject, because churches have unfinished business at the leadership level, not just at the personal level, but at the leadership level of people who have been through things that have never been addressed. And pastors come into revitalization and they just kind of sweep the past under the rug and try to go forward, and nothing happens. In fact, bad things happen. So the kinds of things that are out there where everybody can see it, like church splits. We had a church split in the past, or we had an abusive pastor. I had one church that I worked with whose former pastor, just before the one I was with, had an affair with his youth pastor's wife. And then there is abused pastors, churches that literally treat their pastors poorly and push them out the door and think that God's okay with that. And then there's sinful reactivity, where there is a obvious sin in the congregation that nobody's talking about or nobody's addressing. And then finally, there's past shame, things that have happened in the past that everybody in the community knows about, or past racism, for example. We were, you know, there was a church that I knew of that had been kind of the center of Ku Klux Klan, and the you know, they had never repented of it. And yet at the same time, these churches are trying to go forward. They really believe that they have a call of God on their life, but nothing can be revitalized as long as there is, as the Old Testament concept is, sin in the camp. Yes. And it hasn't been addressed, and it has broken the congregation and continues to influence it. The pastor's not the past. The past is present with them.
Yeah.
Also, along with that, there's individual unfinished business. Each one of us have had experiences in our lives that we've never allowed God to heal, and have comforted ourselves with sin as a result of that, that we carry on in our lives with us. And these kinds of experiences have its spiritual impact on churches. And you know, a lot of times we think, well, the broken people, those are the people who need this kind of help. But I'm telling you that it's at the, even at the pastoral level, if we're not dealing with our unfinished spiritual business, we are inviting, you know, we're inviting disaster up the road.
Yeah.
So that's where I'd like to start. I'd just like to talk about that.
Okay. Well, you know, you bring up the individual part of this whole thing. As a church revitalizer, I've been in all kinds of situations, but I, one comes to my mind. I was working with a church in Eastern North Carolina, and there was just something going on in that congregation you couldn't put your finger on, and nobody would open up about it. Nobody would talk about it. I tried and tried and tried. Well, I decided I was going to do some interviews with some individuals just to see what I could dig out of people's hearts if they would talk to me privately rather than, you know, as a group. And as I began to talk, I talked to the minister of music, which was a volunteer. And I began to talk to him, and he had been raised in that community. He had a brother that had been in that church. But out of that discussion he and I had, it came out that he and his brother had been at odds for 10 years.
Wow.
And the reason they'd been at odds is because their father had passed away and left him some property that the other brother did not get.
Yeah.
And the more we talked, the more I understood this thing is affecting this whole congregation.
Yes.
Because they're angry at each other.
Yes.
And the time that the other brother comes, there's all kinds of problems. So we worked together and we got those two guys back together. They reconciled things. And that church began to grow as a result of that. So it's interesting that not just the whole congregational problem, but an individual problem can stop a church unresolved as well.
Absolutely. 25 years ago, when I was planting in Lakeland, Florida, God took me through a life-changing, transformational moment. And I was an angry man. And I didn't even know why I was an angry man, but I had become addicted to anger. And I'm the pastor of the church. And God used other people in my life to bring me to sit before him and discover from God why I was an angry man. And this led me to start discipling men in my church because I changed. I mean, I went from being an angry man to being a peace-filled man. It changed my marriage. It changed my parenting. And it changed how I pastored. So I began to disciple others in this. And out of that came a little chart that we use to train people called the heart chart.
Oh, yes.
And in the heart chart, we explain something to people. This is not only individually true, but this is church-wide true, that there are symptoms out there that are causing us pain, but the symptoms aren't the problem. The symptoms are just indicating that there is a problem, and that problem is in our hearts, whether it's individually or collectively. We have been wounded in some way in the past. And we have accumulated these wounds, and they don't go away with time. Not, time doesn't heal them.
Yeah.
And instead of turning to God and saying, God, this happened to me, and I need you to take me and heal me, we consciously or unconsciously turn to sin in us to comfort that pain. The sin and the hurt bond together to form this kind of single entity in us, that one doesn't go away because the other one is keeping it, you know, bound to us. You know, in other words, I come to God now and I say, take away this pain, but I've bound it to me by this sin. Or I'm tired of the sin. I say, God, you know, free me from the sin, but it's bound to me by the pain. And I need to surrender both of these things to God.
Oh, yeah.
So let's talk about this at a congregational level. Let's say in the past, you know, we had like this situation with the pastor having an affair with his youth pastor's wife. And we just, what did the church do? Did it heal? No, it didn't go to God and say, heal me, heal us. They said, well, this has happened. Let's get rid of people. Let's, you know, ask him to leave. And instead of turning to God for full healing, thinking they needed healing, they chose sloth. That's one of the seven deadly sins. We just won't take responsibility for it. It's his fault. We don't need to worry about it. And they became indifferent to spiritual things.
Wow.
And by the time the new pastor came, they just had no interest in their future. People were leaving the church not to go to some other church, but just to not go anywhere because they no longer cared about their spiritual life. And this is what happens to congregations, that we've had a wound and we haven't dealt with it before God. We haven't asked God to take us by in hand and heal us. We feel like it's somebody else's problem. Mm-hmm. And yet, because we choose sin to comfort it, whether that's consciously or unconsciously, it is going to have a huge impact. And as time goes on, even bigger.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it in this unresolved situation with this pastor who had the affair, don't you think that unresolved problem can be transferred to that new pastor?
Oh, absolutely.
In the sense that they don't trust him anymore. They don't trust pastors anymore.
That's right.
And I'm finding that is a huge problem in our churches.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, if you've had an abusive pastor in the future or you or any kind of thing like that, you begin to set up boundaries and fences so that you can't be hurt again, you think. Mm-hmm. You know, so we make really bad policies based on our last crisis. Yeah. And we pick up attitudes like pastors can't be trusted. Yeah. Or, you know, I don't want to get too involved. I'll get hurt again. Or, you know, if that pastor talks about money, then he is greedy and he can't, you know, there's all kinds of things that people are thinking out there. As a pastor, you have no idea.
Yeah.
And you walk in and you get it in the, you just can't understand why people are resisting you.
Yeah. Well, tell us a little bit more about this heart chart. I'm really interested in hearing about that.
Okay. I love talking about the heart chart. It's a deceptively simple tool that you can learn the basics of in about 15 minutes and share it with somebody. But people don't understand that they're going to be drawn in because the Spirit of God really speaks to people's hearts even as they're looking at it. And so I just draw two parallel lines and I say, here's the thing you need to understand. You've come to me today or we're having this conversation because something's wrong and you're unhappy about something. And maybe it's your marriage or maybe it's your church or maybe it's your finances or your work or something like that, your children. And those are not the problem. I want you to understand they are what is bothering you right this moment, but there's something underneath the surface and it's in your heart. And then we explain about the heart, because the heart, according to the Bible, is not the place of emotions, but a place of life decisions. So I weigh out what I feel with what I know to come to a life decisions. And here's what's the problem for us, all of us, is that we live in a world affected by the fall. When I say that, I'm referring to Genesis chapter 3, where Adam and Eve were created in perfect relationship with each other, with God, and with the creation around them. And God said, don't eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Otherwise, everything is for you to not only to enjoy, but to be stewards over.
Yeah.
And we know how the story progresses there. Satan shows up in the form of the serpent. He speaks to Eve and asks her about the tree. And she says, we're not to eat of it. We're not even to touch it, because if we do, we will die. And Satan says, well, God lied to you about this. God doesn't want you to eat of this tree, because then you will know what's good and evil yourself, and you won't need God to make decisions over your life anymore. Yeah. And this led her and ultimately Adam to eat of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And here's the problem. Not only did they receive death, but they also got the knowledge of good and evil. And all of us who have descended from Adam and Eve have the knowledge of good and evil. We have a godlike belief in ourselves that we know what is good and what is evil, each one of us. However, the problem is none of us agree about what is good and evil. There is nobody in this world out of 9 billion people that agrees 100% with your definition of good and evil. And I'm also driven by my godhood, my belief in my own godhood, to make decisions that are good for me, whether they impact other people differently than I expect. So each of us are doing our own thing, deciding what is good and evil, and wounding other people. An illustration of this would be like, I'm a young father who's coming home from a long day's work. I am exhausted. I just want to come in, sit in front of the television and binge watch for a while and think about nothing. And just as I get to my front door, my 3-year-old daughter comes crying to me, but I'm done. And in my godhood, I make a decision. It's good for me that she leaves me alone. So I tell her to go away, go to her room, go find her mother and leave me alone. And what I have done is I've done what is good for me, but I've done evil to my daughter.
Oh, yes.
And even though she may not remember that, it is in her soul now.
Yeah.
And we accumulate thousands and thousands of these pains in our lives, some major pains. We've been bullied. We've been abused. We've been betrayed. We've been neglected. And these things don't go away with time. And these experiences damage our emotions. Yeah. And these areas of having to weigh out in my heart what I will do because of my what I think and what I feel. Well, my damaged emotions take on weight, and suddenly the emotions that I feel overcome my rational thinking. Now I'm making decisions that are irrational, rational to me, because my damaged emotions are telling me this is fine, this is the way you should handle it. Road rage, for example. It's good to be angry at people on the road who aren't driving the way I think they should drive. And I don't care if it was my grandmother, I'd run her over, because that's okay, because my emotions are telling me it's okay. People do this all the time. But you see, we can't live with pain. None of us were created for that kind of pain. So we go looking around for comfort. And here's where the other thing in my heart that doesn't belong shows up. Paul talks about this in Romans chapter 7. I don't understand my behavior. I don't do the things I want to do. And the very things I hate is what I'm doing. Why? I'm confused. I look inside. There is sin. Wow. And so in my heart, there is a selection. I call it this. I use the 7 deadly sins. I just say, well, there's appetite, anger, lust, greed, envy, sloth, and pride. And these all offer me an emotional release from the pain I'm feeling. And they actually do, because sin actually does give us an emotional relief. And as a result of that, I might choose one or another, depending on my own personal bent of what I think is good and evil. So I chose anger in my case, but I know people choose appetite. Yeah. I know people who choose sloth. Yeah. I know people, people don't understand sloth as a deadly sin. Sloth is the unwillingness to take responsibility for myself.
Yeah.
And so there's something comforting about saying, I'm not responsible. I don't have to change. I don't have to worry about, don't worry, be happy. And, and so we choose these sins and they bond together and they produce the symptoms, which at first are not troublesome. But as time goes on, I find that I'm not living the kind of life that I desire, that the outcomes are not pretty and helpful and healthy. And even if I am a very moral person and I'm a Christian and say, well, you know, Christians aren't supposed to be angry at people. Christians are supposed to forgive people. I find that I'm not forgiving people. I'm finding in my pride that I want power and control. And where do I apply that? In leadership in the church.
Yeah.
You know, I want the church to be the way that I want it to be because I know what is good and I know what is evil. And guess what? If you cross that line, pastor, or you in the other part of the congregation cross that line, I'm going to fight you.
Yeah.
Where's that coming from? That's coming from my heart.
Right, right.
You see? And right. As a result of this, the church is trapped. I am trapped. Other people are trapped. My family's trapped. I'm passing this down from generation to generation.
Yeah. And the churches are that way.
Exactly.
Everywhere I go.
Exactly. And our only hope. Here's the other side of the heart chart, because, you know, I talk about symptoms becoming addictions, because under stress, you begin to, you know, medicate yourself with one of your symptoms and it becomes an addiction, which is a false identity of who I am in Christ.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I begin to wound myself, which I comfort with more sin, which leads to deeper addiction, which leads to more wounding, and on it goes until I can go in death spiral, crash and burn and lose it all.
Well, wow.
But the good news is, of the heart chart, is there's another side to it. It's Jesus. Jesus is the only one who can heal the hurt of my heart and free me from the deadly sin I've chosen. I don't have the power to either heal myself or free myself, but Jesus does.
Yeah.
And so what the heart chart shows people is, what do you need to surrender to Jesus? Say, here's the hurt, here's the sin. You need to surrender these to Jesus. See, knowledge doesn't heal anybody. If people just get that, the one side of the heart chart, they won't get healed. They won't get free, because knowledge doesn't free anybody. There is a humility of coming to Jesus and saying, I'm a mess and I can't fix myself. Our church is a mess and we can't fix ourselves.
Wow. Yes.
And you know what? Unless we surrender this into your hands, we're stuck and we're likely to end up in a death spiral, crash and burn, and lose it all.
Yes.
And the proof of that, unfortunately, is the amount of churches that are in turmoil, that are plateaued and declining, and how many are going to close their doors this year permanently.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Mm-hmm. You know, the remedy, mm-hmm, is Jesus.
Yes.
I go back to John chapter 4, verses 5 through 19, where Jesus was at the well at Sychar.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman comes up.
Yes.
And man, she had unresolved sin in her life.
Yes.
And the glorious part is that Jesus said, you know, go get your husband. She said, I don't have one. He said, yes, you're right. You've had five. And who you're living with now is not your husband.
Yes.
So he pushed her into a resolution.
Yes.
And he said, go back. And then, of course, we know the whole story about that. She goes back, tells everyone, let me tell you one that has said everything that I need to know. I don't know why. Hold on just a second.
Okay.
I don't know why, you know, you've done this, basically, Jesus was saying, but here's your solution.
Yes.
Go and sin no more.
Yeah.
Boy, I love the concept that we've got to face what it is.
Yes.
But facing it doesn't get it resolved.
No.
We've got to give it to him.
Yes. You know, this goes to what is both Peter and James says in their letters, you know, that God resists the proud but gives grace to the humble.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Grace is God's empowering work where he accomplishes something. He doesn't just have good thoughts about us or has mercy on us. He actually is capable of doing what he intends to do. And this is why we need to surrender to him, because he, when I sat before him as an angry man and I asked him why I was angry, what was this coming from? He revealed to me the root hurt that I had been comforting with anger for almost 30 years of my life.
Wow.
And I surrendered that hurt to him that day and the anger, and I stopped being an angry man. He is capable of healing us in real time. And this is one of the reasons why churches should really consider seriously what Jesus asked the man by the pool of Bethesda. Do you want to get well?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, not do you want to survive as a church? Do you want to keep your doors open? Do you want to keep looking for a pastor who will just tickle your ears and tell you you're okay in handling life the way you are? Do you want to be whole and be used by me or not?
Yeah.
And I believe, unfortunately, that there are those churches who have no intention of getting well, no intention of humbling themselves before the Lord.
I agree.
And the pastors who go there are just merely going to get beat up.
Yeah.
But I think that if a pastor goes into the, and this is my experience, if a pastor goes in and says, first, before we do anything else, let's address our unfinished spiritual business.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to lead the church to do this, or I'm going to disciple my leaders in this so that we begin to grapple with what it means to have this unfinished business and how to get rid of it.
Yeah.
Then that pastor is going to see far more responsiveness to his leadership than if he ignores it. And this is why I told the story at the beginning about my friend, who I know he thought that he was doing well, and he was doing well, but he didn't address or help his leaders address their unfinished spiritual business, and they rose up to destroy what God was doing.
Wow. Wow. Wow.
And I wish he was the only story I could tell about that. But I have another friend who he went to a church that was running about 40 people and doubled that in the first year. And then it went to 200 by the second year. And then the leaders that he had when he came there split the church.
Yeah.
And so 2 years of investment again. And then the leadership who had unfinished spiritual business blew it up. And you have to constantly tell yourself that I am here to be God's pastor, under shepherd to this flock. And what really matters here is not how many people we can get in the door, but how well we're doing in following after God.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah. And so if we follow after God, we can retain the disciples we make. But if we don't do that, then at some point the unfinished business of this church is going to have a repeat performance.
Wow.
And maybe we'll have another church split, or yeah, I will be abused as a pastor, or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's still there in the midst of them.
Well, this is so important. This has been a great time. You know, as we've talked about this, as with any adversity or unresolved kind of conflict, it can either make us better or it can make us bitter.
Yes.
And it's whether we approach that unresolved conflict in faith or whether we avoid that conflict in fear.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to determine whether the church is strengthened or shattered.
Yeah.
And my, what a tremendous concept this is. How can folks get more about this heart chart that you've got? Because I'm sure this is going to whet a lot of people's appetite and want to hear what you've got to say about it.
Yes, I teach a course, and it's about to be totally online on how to teach, how to lead people in spiritual transformation. We call it The Key to Deep Change. There is a book, there's a small group experience, and we train people how to facilitate this. But first, before you even facilitate it for somebody else, you need it personally for yourself.
Yes.
Never assume that you're ready to help other people spiritually until you know where you are. And one of the realities of that, as I'm talking, is that until you are on your own journey with God in intimacy, you'll be afraid to be transparent about your own journey. Yeah. And you can't teach this without being transparent.
Yeah.
But the small group experience is there. The books are there. There's another book I've written besides The Key Deep Change. I've also written a book called Build Deep. And that's about the transformational culture. Not only do you need to disciple people or counsel people, but you also need to preach transformation. You need to understand why people need to hear this, because so often as pastors, we are being reformational rather than transformational.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And by reformational, I don't mean reformed theology, which I often get asked. I said, no, what you're doing is you're telling people to reform themselves to look like Jesus, and they have no power to do that. This is why God gave us his spirit. And so you need to understand the difference between preaching reformational and preaching transformational. You need to help people see that they will never become like Jesus in their own power. And that everything that God has called us to in terms of obedience is going to be empowered by his spirit, so that people will have hope that they, you know, and so often people feel hopeless that I'll ever measure up. But when you're preaching transformationally, like Jesus did and taught, then people said, I have hope for the first time.
Yeah.
I'm not rejected by God. God will empower me to be holy and whole.
Amen. Amen. Well, for more information about Dr. Smith's ministry, go to the website, www.churchequippers.com. You can get his books there. Get more information about this heart chart there and the course that he's going to be teaching. I just encourage you to do that. Our time's gone, Dr. Smith. Thank you so much.
I've enjoyed being with
us today. It's just been a joy having you. And my, what enlightening concepts that we've heard from you today. And it is so important that I think churches go back, pastors go back, deal with their own personal issues and the corporate issues of their church before they ever call another pastor.
Yes.
And deal with it if they possibly can. Yes. So thank you so much for you taking time to be with us on this broadcast. This is Dr. Steve Sales saying thanks for listening. My prayer is that something we discuss might help you help your church. God bless you until the next time. Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us for Revitalize and Restart. Make sure to visit our website, www.operation-transformation.org, and subscribe to our show in iTunes, Stitcher, or via RSS so you'll never miss a show. While you're at it, if you found value in this show, we'd appreciate a rating on iTunes. Or if you simply tell a friend about the show, that would help us out too. Don't forget to join us next time, and again, thanks for listening.